The Team Never Quit podcast is sponsored by Navy Federal Credit Union. Navy Federal Credit Union serves all branches of the armed forces, including families of service members. Learn more at NavyFederal.org.
Team Never Quit. Team Never Quit. Team Never Quit Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
You know, Marcus, I bought a copy of your book a long time ago and read it, and I had your book when I was living in Singapore. I had your book in Singapore with me, and it's in transit, in sea transit on the way back because I relocated back to the U.S.
Yeah.
So I had to reread your book, and so I rebought another copy of the book, and it's actually it was pretty interesting rereading your book the second time because there was a lot of details that I thought I remembered a certain way. And then when I reread it, I was like, oh, this isn't exactly how I remembered it being when I read it the first time, cause it'd been several years ago. You actually, my conditioning coach, strength and conditioning coach, met you in the Palms in Las Vegas, probably, I'm going to guess somewhere around 2010.
That's right. Yep, absolutely.
10 or 11. And it was about that time, 10 or 11. And he had a copy of your book and you signed a copy of the book for him.
Right on.
Yeah.
He was a Marine that served.
Mikey, right?
What?
Mike? Come on, Mike.
Holy crap. Yeah, exactly.
That's him, right?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. How's he doing?
He actually fell a few years back. They don't know why, what happened to him, but he was in the gym and it was like his nervous system just shut down. Like he didn't faint or anything, but just passed out and like a timber tree hit the floor. His head smacked the floor. And he's kind of had this onset of dementia, and it's really weird because this is a guy who, like, I have a picture of us together working out where he lost a bet to me, and he's like one of these guys that you never see him with his shirt off except for he used to bodybuild, so he'd step on stage, but aside from that he always has these like sweatshirts that are cut three-quarter length on his
forearm. He's a Marine, right?
Exactly. So two tools in Vietnam. Yeah, like you meet this guy, you don't forget him, he's very intense.
Sure.
But he lost a bet to me one time at the gym, so the bet was that he had to train me with his shirt off, which was like a really big deal to him. And so I took this picture, and like, this is a guy that I really looked up to, just his lifestyle, his dedication to fitness. He literally lived in the gym.
Yeah.
And then after he fell, it's almost like he forgot who he was. And now he'll eat like Wendy's cheeseburgers for lunch. And I'm scratching my head, like, who are you? And, so like, since he fell, and the doctors think that, you know, because he suffers from PTSD from the war.
Yeah.
One of those guys that wakes up in the middle of the jungle half the time. And,
right.
So he never rests properly. So his brain just over the years, and they think like the trauma to his brain really kind of messed things up. And since he doesn't have this ability to actually give his brain the recovery it needs on a daily basis, that's kind of what's, taking him down that path.
Huh. Well, we know a lot of people in the neuro world. My brother's in there, and there's a lot of new stuff that's happening with the veterans. So if he doesn't have anybody to reach out to, man, we can hook y'all up with that.
Dude, that's awesome. I will. I may actually take
that guy, man. He's one of the dudes make you work, because the guy who trained me did the same thing back in the day right before I came in the SEAL teams, man. It was like a nonstop thing. They're always in your ass, dude. Just kind of like loved being them. It's what you think a military guy would look like. Especially with Mikey, man, he was a Marine.
Yeah, you know, I tell you, I listened to one of your interviews when you were talking about Billy Shelton and about how he like he would just grind you to the ground. You know, the funny thing about Mike is that Mike, he's very intense and he'll yell when you're not working out, and like he commands respect. But like we he and I would train together, and he never yelled at me when I was training. Like, that wasn't his style. Like, and he, I think he knew he didn't need to. There was this time where he and I were training together, and we were outside doing this circuit, you know, pushing sleds and, you know, wheel ferrules and doing all these jump ups on these plyo boxes. And I just remember being midway through this workout and like jumping up and down on this plyo box. And I stopped for a second and had to take like a breath, like, and Mike looked at me and he just looked at me and goes, "You okay?" And I, like, immediately I was so irritated. I was like I just showed this sign of weakness, and it was almost like he knew exactly how to motivate me. Just this soft words, like, "You okay? Like, something wrong with you?" As if I'm not doing things at this optimal level that I am capable. And which me, you know, and it's just like, you know, you're in the middle of that workout and you take that breath, and man, I was like immediately fired up. Like, it didn't take this, like, "Get your ass moving" kind of yelling. And he had this very unique way of training me that just had me just give him everything I had every time we were in that gym.
Those guys, they're the worst ones to train with, because you don't know what that is. It's just like, "Hey man, are you motivating me or are you like picking on me? Because it's kind of doing both to me right now, and I don't know how to take it."
It's psychological, you know what I mean? Warfare, man.
Yeah, it is. And that's where those Vietnam guys, they do it brilliantly. They got some kind of crazy mind control they brought back. I know what that is, or I don't. I have no idea really, but I remember that happening. Supo would do that too, man. I'm like, "Dude, I'm terrified, but I'm not." You know, it's kind of like, all right. Especially if they're in there with you grinding, that yeah, changes everything. And them guys, they can do that stuff. So, man, I'll pray for him, man.
Appreciate it, man.
Yep. All right. I'm sorry, man.
Let's kick this thing off officially. You guys are joining us mid conversation, because some conversations are just too dang good to start with an intro. So that's where we're at. Rich Franklin is a podcast host, actor, UFC Hall of Famer, and away from the confines of the cage, Franklin believes in living a life of purpose and is constantly sourcing for new avenues of personal growth. Rich, welcome to the show, man.
Good to be here. Thank you guys for having me on, man. I've really been looking forward to this. I've never personally met Marcus. I don't know if the listeners have been listening to the conversation up to this point, but my strength conditioning coach actually met him out in Vegas when we were out there one time. I wasn't competing at the time. We were at the Palms. I had a friend of mine that was competing at the Palms, and he bumped into Marcus, was very excited about it. Actually had a copy of your book. Marcus signed it, and I didn't get to meet you at the time. And so anyway, life comes full circle, and here we are. So thanks for having me on.
You bet. I've been looking forward to this. I've followed your career, not just in the cage, but outside of it too. I've been fascinated. Thank you again for doing this, man. It's going to be fun.
So let's kick this thing off with an icebreaker. Since you're such a badass, Rich, I'm going to kick it off with a humbling question. What is one thing that you're most terrible at?
Baking. I tell you what, just since I'm an athlete, well, I'll go sports side on this. Any sport, like a sport that requires me to hold something like a baseball bat or a golf club, terrible.
Is that true? Like,
that's absolutely true. I'm terrible. I showed up to a church picnic one time, and by the time I got there, the softball game had already started. The teams were split, and so they went ahead and put me on one of the teams. And the team I was on was at bat. So then when it came my time to bat, everybody on the field, I don't know, they took like 10-20 yard steps back, like, because they're like, "Oh man, he's gonna crank this one." And I was like, "Guys, no, you can go ahead and come on back in. Like, trust me, this is not gonna be pretty." And they're like, yeah, whatever. And they threw that first softball pitch. And this is softball, it's not even baseball. And man, I took a swing at that ball and missed. And everybody was like, "Oh, he wasn't kidding." And then the entire outfield just moves in like 10-20 yards as suggested. So I'm terrible at sports where I have to hold things.
Marcus, what about you, man?
All right, so I was born without depth perception because my eyes were messed up at birth because I'm a twin. It's a whole nother story altogether. It's like any sport requires where you have to have that. Like, I don't think you'd want me parking the shuttle in space where they had to reroute it. I'm like, you don't want me doing that.
But Marcus, you're a sniper.
I am. And let me tell you something.
How's that even possible?
Okay. Well, I had a
great question.
Very great question. That's a great question. I will give you the answer. People ask me that all the time, and that's where I had to learn how to do this. So I had to measure distance with known objects. Like 100 yards is a football field. I can relativity. I had to theorize in relativity everything down to logic. I know that at 200 yards, a truck window, my thumbnail can fit into that. And like at the minimum distance, a sniper will come in usually, because under 200 yards, you go from the rifle, you get personal, it gets quiet, right? So I had to do, dude, sniper school kicked my ass so bad. Thank God the instructors worked. We couldn't figure out what was wrong, because my brother and I, come to find out, are mirror twins. So he's the left side, I'm the right. I'm right eye dominant, he's left eye dominant. He has to shoot left hand. They had to completely switch him back around and correct him. And then I came in afterwards. And during snaps and movers, like at 600, 700, 800 yards, man, I had no idea. So I literally had to, it made me a good spotter, because I had to scan the area. I had to know how fast the wind's going, and by what the vegetation is doing and how it pushes. When something walks up on us, I had to know why it looked a certain way at a certain distance. And it was a disability when I was going through, but it actually became a distinct ability. Like once you, that's the thing, man, is when one of the weaknesses, if you take time to train it up, like God hooks you up with those on purpose.
Yeah.
And it was difficult.
Yeah, when I'll tell you the one experience I had with that, I got poked in the eye in my Dan Henderson fight really bad.
I remember that. I remember.
Yeah, it took a big chunk out of my eye. But for about the last minute and a half of that match, like I was trying to clear my eye out, and you just can't. And so the best way I can describe it is like, if you've ever been swimming with goggles before, and like one side, like one goggle fills up with water and the other one doesn't. That's what my vision was like. And so when you're stripped of that depth perception and you're not like, you can use that, eventually it can become like an asset. For the last minute and a half of that match, like I didn't know if I was standing a foot in front of him or 5 feet in front of him. I couldn't tell. And I was like, man, I'm getting knocked out in this match, like the last minute and a half. And, but yeah, no, it's that really took me out of my game.
That's when it really comes into play, is when I get in a fight. Yeah. Usually I have to take a first hit. I'm like, oh, I got your distance now, homie.
Yeah, but man, you can't afford to take.
You're just
take
swinging.
That's why I never start any fights. I'm like, man, yeah, I just, you know.
You'd be fighting like a T-Rex.
And let me tell you something, bro. You actually nailed that right, because when it came into when my disability went away is when I went underwater, and I was a Navy SEAL. So it, I don't know why I said it like that. I know you know that, but I was at one of the teams I was at. They called us the regulators, because we spend most of our time underwater. And I know what you're talking about. When you lose a mask, I'd lose a mask on a dive or something. I have to do a dive without it, man. And you're talking about 6 to 8 hours underwater without a mask, salt water. You come up, you can't see nothing. It's all doing that is I would imagine the equivalent of getting stabbed punched in the eye. It saturates it so much that everything kind of does these whoom whoom things. You don't even know what's happening.
At six, I can't imagine. I'll do mask clears, like, because I'm scuba certified, and I'll do a mask clear. And even that, like when the salt water gets in my eyes for just a few seconds, sometimes if I screw that up, I'm like, that's not fun.
No,
6 to 8 hours underwater and salt water is just.
Bro, I came up looking like Garfield. Or like I'd been in the ring, like, you know, you step in the ring with every dude you ever fought. It was the only equivalent I could think of. There's an Andrew Dice Clay movie called The Skull Crusher or something like that. Anyways, there's this I don't know how that popped into my head for like that. But anyway, it swells up so bad, it's hilarious. But it doesn't take long. After you kind of get in there and, you know, that sting happens, it's almost saline solution. So you're eventually, that's what, you'll equalize and you'll straighten out. It'll be good.
Yeah, I didn't even know it was possible to be underwater in salt water that long with no mask.
You can't believe what they'll do to us underwater, bro.
I mean, I've read enough.
If you're a diver,
I've read enough SEAL training books at this point that I'm like, I probably would believe it.
Bro, they don't even talk about what they do to us in that program, because most people wouldn't want to come in. If you had any idea that they'd stick you over there like they did to us, it's something. There's not very many guys at that team, and most people don't even know about that team. But if you're a diver, that's awesome. I mean, I kind of started out at a young age. The SEAL teams, I tell you, that's not really scuba diving. They take the fun out of it.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. All right, so man, let's back this up a little bit.
Take us way back, because for those of you guys that don't know out there,
wait a second, what was your answer on that?
I there's a lot of things I'm not good at. If I was sticking to the sports thing, sports in general, I was never incredible at sports. Soccer and tennis I was okay at. The hand eye coordination though, baseball, football, basketball, not so good. I think I'm just bad at taking instruction.
Well, which is it?
Yeah, probably both.
Oh, okay. All right. Be honest. What you think? Both. Thank you for your honesty.
Yeah, both. Rich, you were a math teacher. Is that true?
Yeah, I was. You know, it's funny you talk about like not being good at sports. Honestly, like I didn't grow up being an amazing athlete. You know, people think like, oh, well, this guy, he won a UFC title or whatever. When you see football players that win, win a Heisman Trophy or win a Super Bowl trophy or something like that, you think that there's probably this pedigree of talent. Like, I don't know, their dad was a quarterback and their grandfather was a quarterback and they were the state champion quarterback or something. And I actually, in high school, I was a third string high school football player, man. Like, my first love was football and I wanted to play college ball and I obviously wanted to play pro bowl, and it just wasn't in my cards. I didn't have the God-given talent for that. So I was like Rudy. If you've seen the movie Rudy, I was that guy. First guy on the field, last guy off the field, and probably had my entire senior year a total of about 6 minutes of playing time. And so when my senior year, when we were hanging up our pads, I was like, what am I going to do? And for fun, I got involved in martial arts, like just so that I could do something that was quote unquote athletic. And
what age is this? High school, right?
What?
High school?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Like, go ahead.
Playing college, that wasn't it. That was completely out of the cards for me. I'm a mid-range athlete. I'm not super explosive, but I can grind. Like, I'm just a grinder, and I'll keep going and going. So I can maintain a certain level of explosiveness for a long period of time. But just that overall explosive and power, like, I didn't have what I needed to play like college or NFL ball. So, you know, my senior year, I had no clue what I really wanted to do. I kind of banked on being a ball player, I guess, as a kid growing up. And then the guidance counselor started talking to me about teaching, and she's like, man, you have this knack for breaking things down and explaining it in layman's terms. And so I was like, then I'll just major in education in college. And I was good at math, so I did math and went to a university here in Cincinnati.
Hold on for a second. Let's just explain this. Like, say, because when this is one of those conversations when you have it, like, people, there is a one or the other. Like, there is not anybody who's just all right at math. You know what I'm talking about? Like, you're either good at it or you're not. I got kids now, bro, and this is the funniest thing, man. I mean,
are they teaching that Common Core math to your kids?
Oh, you can't. I mean, there's all kinds of, we could talk it's about terrible. That all day long. But what I didn't know, and this is a question. So you got kids on the ground. Not that I did bad at math, but I had to study, right? So I wasn't one of the ones that just picked that stuff up. I got to refresh. But when I had to teach my kids math, I remember teaching them the nines. And I didn't know that trick. Even to up into the point when I was teaching my kids, that'd be like 9 + 7. I'd be like, I'd have to use my fingers or go on my head or something. I don't know why that was the way it was. Until somebody told me, he's like, all right, so whatever you, 9 + whatever number is the number underneath it. So 9 + 7, what comes before that? 6. Put a 1 in front of it, 16. 9 + 6, what's underneath that? 5. It's 15. 9 + 5 is 14. Again, it's so far. I was like, wait a second, is that right? And they were like, yeah. I was like, is there a freaking trick for everything? And they were like, yes, there is. It's just a matter if someone knows how to teach it to you. And that's, like, there's logic. Like, when you say something and everybody gets it. Like, there's not somebody who really gets it, somebody in the back who has no idea, and somebody in the middle who can figure it out. I mean, like, everybody understands it. That's a gift, man.
But you know what, though? Listen, when I was in high school, so my senior year, for example, I was taking a calculus course, and I decided not to take the advanced calc course just because I was like, I don't need it. And then in my senior year, I decided that I was going to major in mathematics. So my instructor was like, look, if you finish the year out with the advanced calc course, then you can test out of your calc in your freshman year of college. So the second half of the year, like, I was coming in after school to kind of make up the ground for what I'd lost on this advanced calc course. Long story short, I had only tested out of 3 of the 4 quarters that I needed for college calculus. And I couldn't test out of 3 quarters and just pick up at calc 4. So I was like, well, I'm just going to go ahead and take all 4 quarters of calc. I got into college, man, and I'm taking calculus, and I didn't have to study, and I was getting, you know, A-, B+, that kind of average through the 4 quarters of calculus. And I was like, man, this is easy. My sophomore year, I took linear algebra, which sounds easy. It's algebra and lines. Right. It doesn't get any more complex than that, but it did. And I had this rude awakening. Like, suddenly I'm not the kid from Good Will Hunting. Like, I had to actually work my butt off in college. I almost dropped out of college at that point in time because I was doing so terribly in that class, and that was my major. I was like, I should be good at this, and I had been good at it my whole life. And so I quickly realized, like, mathematics, like being a sniper or like being a fighter or anything else, it's a skill, and you have to work at it. Yeah. And now at this stage of the game, like, I had a buddy one night that called me. He's like, hey, man, I'm taking this calc course in college. I'm like, you do realize I haven't seen this stuff for like 20 years now. So I literally, like, I have a little box over here with my college books in it. I was like, look, give me 20 minutes. Let me pull my books out. And I pull my books out. I'm like thumbing through things, studying and finding the equations, all the tricks that you referred to, and was able to help him out. But I mean, yeah, it's a skill like anything else.
Well, some of the guys in my crew, every now and then we'll get together and start, we have to crunch, because some of the people are great at it. Like my father, he was a math genius. He could just do that stuff in his head. Imagine the guys up in space, right? Like astronauts. Like, hey, man, we needed to crunch these gimbal numbers. I'd be like, man, what'd they say you need? He's like, hey, we got to do this math. I'd be like, man, let's say we ain't going to make it. I mean, there's just some guys down here. And I read one. I swear, I don't even remember where I was at, man. But it was a framed picture. A framed picture. And it said, God made me bad at math because he knew I'd be too powerful. And that was a level of comfort for me, because I tell you what, in the beginning, going through school, I didn't have... It was weird because I had to study real hard and I didn't really remember it. And then now I'm at a point in my life where I study it now. Like, it interests me, and I can't figure that out. I guess it's because we studied everything else or got our faces kicked in so much that that's what's left. But I always thought that was the coolest thing when you would come into the ring, dude, is that you were the math teacher. I was like,
yeah, but you listen, Marcus, you got to be good at math because like windages and optic adjustments. And
I am now. Else. That's my point. It was the way it was taught to me.
Yeah,
I was like, when it was made relative to me, like, why do I, give me some reason to know these numbers and why they compute like that. And once they put it in front of me like that, I was like, I got it. I saw it. Yeah, I mean, not only did I get it, I remembered it, because it made so much sense that you can't forget it. It's almost like that's the code.
As a sniper, you're suddenly like, oh, hyperbolas and parabolas and conics, they all make sense.
They all
now.
Make sense. Yeah, why the earth spins the way it does, why the planets. I was like, okay. Well, I was like, man, we'll lead with that, and I'll get it.
We can learn math and play with guns.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
listen,
man.
If I was your teacher, like, instead of saying, like, you know, a train leaves Chicago heading, you know, towards New York at 80 miles an hour.
Correct.
I would have been like this. Listen, Marcus, a train leaves Chicago at 80 miles an hour heading due east, and you're on a mountain that's 1,200 yards away with a wind of now. I'm like, okay, so how much do you have to lead in order to make this shot type of thing?
Bro, now I can break it down to you because I know how long the track is, how many cars are on it, how many people are in each car.
There all right, you go.
As opposed to when the sun's going down or coming up and the wind behind it. That's the stuff I'll tell you now. And I had no idea why that was the way it was when I was a kid. But now I do.
You weren't given the right math problems.
That's right, man. I wasn't given the right patterns.
If I was your teacher, you would have been good at math when you were a kid.
Damn right. I'm learning right now. I've been waiting. I'm excited about this. This is going to be fun.
So how long? Obviously, you graduated because you went on to be the math teacher. How long?
Yeah. First of all, this back in the family. Mom, dad, are they teachers? I mean, we're just.
No.
Brother Greg,
my dad,
right?
My dad was like the guy that barely graduated high school. Yeah. I mean, like my dad graduated in 1969, so he was part of that.
Is he a tough bat? But is he tough? I mean, tough. I don't mean no disrespect. I mean, say it like that. I'm sure he is. It's like my father was, and usually I'm just curious as to, was it a father son thing, or how'd you get into the fight game and football?
Well, I don't know really, because I think, okay, so here, my dad was, I'm about 6'1", 220, 225. I keep myself like, I look pretty close to that magazine that you got in front of you there. Like
All the time. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I just live that way. Like I still grind, like I'm training for a fight. Like people ask me all the time, like, you're still fighting. But my dad and a lot of the men in my family, like my uncle and my cousins, my dad was 6'4", and when he was younger, he was about 280, and he looked like a guy who played defensive tackle for an NFL team.
Oh,
like,
man.
And he had this handshake, not like the kind of handshake where he was trying to crush your hand. He wouldn't try to crush your hand, but if you ever shook my dad's hand.
Oh, yeah. I know them dudes. Right.
Yeah, yeah. And
they're not trying. It just goes all the way around your mitts to where you, even if you're trying, it's like this sticking out one end and kind of, bro, that's happened to me twice. And I never forgot it.
Yeah, because my dad, like, he shook my hand one time. And I'm like every time, I'm like, Dad, like, you know, quit squeezing my hand. He's like, I thought you were tough, like you're a fighter. I'm like, yeah, I punch people with these things.
They're brutal, like, hurt, man,
you know?
They're sore.
Just, when you get me in there, like reaching for a French fry in between the seat. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about? Man, dude, it's not who you think. It's not the, like, basketball players or people with the gigantic hand. It's not them kind of, it's something different, man. When they grab a hold of you, like, twice, I'll never forget it. You kind of feel like, what?
Yeah, so, you know, growing up in that environment, I was kind of the runt of the family, and I think that's really what motivated me, like, from a young age to work really hard at things. Like, you know, I don't know, I probably had some sort of...
Did your brother, did he whip your ass all the time? Greg,
no,
right?
I was the bigger brother.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. But actually, my brother's bigger. Like, he's got my dad's genes. So
that's my point. I was like, he may be younger, but, I mean, is he bigger or...
Yeah, he's a little bit bigger than me now, but at the time, I mean, I'm 2.5 years older than him. So, you know, unlike, like, your brother is only 7 minutes older than you. You guys are probably roughly the same size, but I was always bigger than my brother, so I had that advantage growing up. But so now, if it wasn't for my ability to fight, I'd probably have a hard time with my brother because he's about my height, but he's like 250.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, he's more of a dad bod kind of guy. He enjoys his beer and cookies too, but he works out and he's strong.
Well, that's a thing. You know, you get to a certain age, you earn that, I think. You know, it might have been Peyton Manning that said, if you got a six pack after you're 40, man, you either better be a football player or a model or something, man. You know, it's kind of like.
Well, I'm neither, man. But I do have a six pack.
And there's in Texas in November, we grow out our beard. Like from November to January 1st, it's beer bellies and beards, man. You can just kind of relax down here.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
you gotta work your ass off when the year comes around because about summertime.
You know, I'll tell you, it's like I have this really hard time, Marcus, like with things because I've really my whole life has been established on the grind that I put in, and if I didn't grind, like if it wasn't for my work ethic, I wouldn't be where I am today, like within the sports world, in college, you know. And I've had moments of where I've mentally folded in life. Like my sophomore year of college, when I took that linear algebra class, like I mentally folded there. I literally showed up to one of my classes with my drop slips. This is before the internet, or at least the widely used internet.
Oh, I remember. It was back in 1900s.
Exactly. Yeah. Last century. But no, I had those like triplicate carbon copy, drop slips. One of them filled out. And my instructor gave me this, pep rally talk, like, listen, man, you know, and talked me into coming in and taking this exam. And, you know, it ended up changing my life around academically. But no, man, I mean, that's it. It's like all I got is this work ethic. And so my ability to say, I'm over 40, I've earned it. I'm like, I can't, man. I still grind. I get up. And even on days where I don't plan on training hard, like yesterday's the Lord's Day. So I go to church on Sundays. And I still tell myself, like, it's Sunday, I'm going to get up and I'm going to hit 15 minutes on my treadmill just to force myself to do it, even though it's that day. Like, just,
I'm dude,
like,
are I gotta you still get up running on a treadmill? Run.
Heck yeah, I do.
Is it cold up there every day?
Well, you know
I don't
what,
know
man,
how you do that, man. We have them here. I do the same thing. I got my ass on church on Sunday too, man. And then I still come down here and try to do something. And
exactly.
I think we're supposed to take a day off. I can't stop doing that either. I'm the same way. I didn't have any special skills. I was mid-range, but little because I was a twin. And even in the SEAL teams, we have to keep a journal every day. I would write work harder than everybody else. But that's all you get. That's a thing. Even if you don't have any other skill set, you can do that. And that's what I respected about. I always heard that about you. Is you just like outwork every other person.
Dude, that's the case. You know, we were talking about Mike earlier in training with him, and I would come in, and this is no joke.
Is this where you got that from?
No, I had that. This was.
I was gonna say from your dad and everybody.
Yeah, I think this was the psychology of just being a young, like the small kid in the family.
Oh yeah, Roger.
You know, like
there's always something, right?
This came at a young age. Yeah.
Go ahead.
But,
I'm sorry.
I mean, when I was training with Mike, like those workouts were so hard. Like our conditioning sessions that we would do, they were so difficult that I would come in like we would work out on a Monday morning, and on Sunday night I would go to bed with anxiety, knowing what, like, knowing what I was about to go through. Yeah, right. Like, it's like, it's amazing what one human can do to another human in an hour or hour and a half. Right. It's just like, and so,
and you're doing it to yourself. I mean, they're just kind of there. That's the weirdest mental grind on when you, as a matter of fact, you don't ever want to think about it like that, because wait a minute, I'm beating my own ass while this is here motivating me here. Yeah, it's weird, but yeah, that's a thing. If y'all didn't know about it, man. It's a thing.
You know, actually today, so like today's a perfect example. I'll tell you what I did for my workout today. Me and my brother went into the gym, and he calls me. He's like, dude, don't get stupid today. And I was like, no promises. So we went into the gym today, and we were on the turf using the prowlers. It was legs day, and we did these real heavy sled pushes, where we, like, I had weight loaded on the sled, but also we were sitting on the sled for each other, and we did these heavy sled pushes, then mixed that with these resistance band sprints.
Yeah.
And we did that to pre-exhaust our legs before we actually got to, like, our squatting motion, which today was a hack squat machine. And by the time we got there, our legs were so shot, we couldn't, like, it was like our weight was cut in half. And then when we finished doing that, I was like, all right, man. I said, and I looked at him, I said, I'm sorry for what I'm about to do to you. And he's like, come on, man. And we did this 100 rep set with just the bar, 100 rep set of squats with the bar. But like, our legs were just so shot that it got to a point where I think I got to 50 straight, and then I had to break it down into sets of 10 because I was just having such trouble just with 45 pound bar on my back. Yeah. And, but man, every week it's like this every week. I do the same thing to myself, and to the point where if I had to get on a plane today, like, my legs would sit there and cramp up, and I'd be like sitting in the plane like, oh my God, why did I do this to myself again? But I do it every week.
Yeah. I don't know why. Well, conditioning routine, we started with it. I still have to grind somehow too. And I was explaining this to some of the younger kids. It's like, you see those older guys, like, when I say old, I mean like 90 years old, where their body looks like it's contorting. I was like, that's their muscles are just tightened up. Like, yeah. The first part of your life, you're building them. That's why they call the back end the stretch part. Like, you're supposed to kind of stretch it out a little bit. Because, and if you notice, as you stretch, you get more fluid. It's just like a hot rod when you crank that sucker up, man. You got to give it time to warm up. And is that your cardio time too? If we're talking about working out stuff, because I still have to do this, if you got something good, brother, you need to throw it at me.
Well,
I don't use the steel. I don't lift the big, I don't go heavy anymore. I mean, I don't mess around with all that. I do the bands and the free weights, but it's not heavy. I mean, nothing over 50 pounds.
I mean, it depends on how you define heavy for me, because
like 300 pounds. I'm talking about like over 300 pounds.
Oh yeah. Like, I'll do, like, I went to, I actually posted a video of me. I think I posted this one on my Instagram. I can't remember, but I was out with a guy that I know, that buddy of mine, Hans Mollenkamp. I was at his gym, and he does some work for Monster Energy Drink, and we walk out there, and he's like, well, let's just go ahead and work out. And he's got 335 on the deadlift bar.
Dude, yeah, no.
And he's like, let's do some. And we hadn't even warmed up.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
I couldn't do. I mean, no.
Yeah, I was like, I said, are you kidding me? Let's warm up. He's like, well, warm up with that. I'm like, 335. So I was like, all right, fine. I'll go ahead. And you know, the first, like, I did a set, like one rep, and I did another rep, and I get myself warmed up, which was just dumb. Like, I don't warm up with that kind of weight. But then we started talking trash, and I looked at him. I said, he's like, how many you want to do? And because he was like talking trash.
Right. See, that's one lift. Yeah, he does there really it well. Is right there.
Yeah. And then I looked at him straight up. I was like, I'm going to do this 25 reps. And yeah, he's like,
what's up?
He's like, I'll do it 30. And I'm like, I want to see you.
That same and way, man. That's how we get in there like that.
Yeah. And I literally picked this bar up and did 35 reps at 330 or 25 reps at 335. And he looked at me. He's like, yeah, no, I can't do that. So. Yeah, no, you know, I mean, for me, I just define heavy as like something that is the weight's so heavy that I can only move it, say, like less than 10 times. And I stay out of that weight range now. But other than that, like putting some weight on my back, even if it's, you know, 200, 300, 400 pounds, as long as I can move it, you know, 15 plus times.
All right. So just to do what? To keep your body where it's at? Because what are you training? Back then when I had to lift that much weight, it was for a reason. I'm saying you're still doing that, and that was the way. What's what?
I don't, because I don't know how not to.
Oh, check, Roger. That's all you had to say. Right? I mean, that's an answer. Like, no, that is an answer, 100%.
Right. It's like if you take the grind away from me,
yeah.
Then what am I?
Right.
Right. And it's like, and it doesn't. But the thing is, Marcus, is it's like this grind, this work ethic that I have. I don't. It's not just the way that I work out. It's the way that I approach everything in life. There's nothing where I'm just like, I've kind of earned my keep here, so I can kind of half-ass work out, or I can half-ass.
Yeah, no. That won't ever happen. That's ingrained. Like, and I tell people this all the time. Like the babies that were born in the 70s and 80s, we're different than everybody else.
Oh yeah,
we're hybrids. We're a little bit of the old school, a little bit of the new. I mean, you got the millennials mm-hmm. on the ground, their thing, and the baby, but we're completely different. Up until the point how we work out.
Yeah.
The only way, I know this, is as extreme as the SEALs were and what we did, we can only be like that if you were like the way you were, which you were. We fed off of y'all. That's who we would watch. I would watch you over while I was overseas.
Yeah.
We couldn't get any other TV on there, but they would make sure they had the fights on. Back then, that was a different type of fighting, what you guys were doing. And I'm not trying to bash the younger guys. I mean, there's some great fighters in there, but I mean, you didn't miss one of the when you guys were in there.
No.
When they threw y'all's generation in the cage, you didn't miss it. No matter where we were at. It's kind of like when they throw us in there too. Whenever we were going in there, it was going to wreck shop.
You know, it's funny. I travel and I've done quite a bit of work with the military, like traveling and either doing like little training camps, like visiting the McMAT program or the Army Combatives programs and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I've actually met with some SEAL groups and taught seminars.
I was gonna say, you
like
trained
that.
Us before. You've been out there. But that's who teaches us how to fight. Not only did we watch y'all, you guys would actually come out. I didn't know if you were part of that program or not, because we never worked together. But I figured you were.
And it's so funny, like, from my perspective, the respect that I get from the, like, military groups, particularly when you're talking about special forces military groups, like a Navy SEALs group. And I always tell people, I'm like, listen, man, I said, you got to understand the way that, like, a UFC fighter, like somebody like myself, how we revere people that are in programs like the SEALs, because you guys, like, every night when I'm training for a fight, like, I go to bed at the same time, I wake up at the same time, I get plenty of sleep, my nutrition is on point, I have recovery methods like ice baths and massages that I have to do. And massage sounds fun, but when you do massages properly, they're not great. But either way, it's like, I take care of myself. Like, you guys are dropped into a combat zone. You're in a super high stress situation. Your nutrition is completely jacked. You're semi-dehydrated half the time. You're running on zero sleep. And then you're basically expected to perform at the same level that an elite athlete is expected to perform, while the elite athlete lives this life of comfort. So, like, when I look at myself and, like, I hear, like, SEALs and stuff talk to me, like, man, mad respect. I'm like, I'm nothing like you guys, because it's a whole different world out there.
Well, that's how we train. And that's the difference between us and everybody else is that very reason. Most everybody else will train till they get worn out and then they'll stop. We'll train till we wear ourselves out and then the training will start.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like fighters, man, you guys don't lose the fight till the end when you're worn out.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Like, if you train that part, but it's hard to get to that exhaustion level because the fight in itself is its own reality. I mean, we'll get into that in a minute, but the thing that we were, when you guys would show up, oh, yeah. That was a big thing. That's a respect thing, because how hard it is for us to get the qualifications that we have. It's the same thing. It's a respect level to y'all. I mean, you have the same qualifications. You know how hard that is to become one of these guys and on that level. So as soon as you walk in the door, we're like, hey, man, teach us what you know.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, that's the one thing that we're good at is hand to hand combat. I was out at Camp Pendleton one time, and I was with the MARSOC unit And, you know, I mean, I'm a Midwest guy and I like shooting. Actually, I went shooting with a couple of my buddies yesterday. And so we're on the shooting course with these MARSOC guys. And they're like, it was this time course that they did, this little obstacle course where you shot these targets and you had to maneuver about the course. And I was thinking, like, all right, I mean, I didn't expect myself to be as good as these guys, but I was like, you know, I should be able to kind of carry my weight, hold my own here. And man, as soon as that instructor said go, I never saw people with firearms moving the way that like as quickly and as efficiently as they moved. And I'm in the middle of this course too. And suddenly I have to like drop down and do my stuff. And I end up finishing the course, like, I don't know, probably 7 seconds behind the guy that I was competing with. Like, we did several runs, but it was like 7 seconds is like, if you're running against Usain Bolt in a 100-meter dash and you're like at the 50 meter line where he's already coming across the finish line. Like, it's just ridiculous, you know? And so, that definitely was one of those things where I'm like, yeah, no, I realize I have a specialty for sure. And that, and all this other stuff is not something that I specialize in, but I'm definitely a hobbyist.
We'll be right back.
We are supported by...
I was in a similar situation, man. When I had to go hang out up in Hollywood, there's some team guy. It was a birthday party. We went and played paintball.
Oh yeah.
All right. And they wanted to see how. And they just at the end of all of it, it was all of them against a couple. They wanted to go against a SEAL, see how long it would take for them if they could beat us, because there was a bunch of them and there was only a handful of us.
Were you guys playing like a speedball on a course?
Or yeah, we were on a course.
that's completely different, man.
Absolutely. And I tried.
It's not like military strategy to that game.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So when it was over, before it even, like, we just kind of clambered in there and they couldn't believe how fast we were and how, even though we hadn't worked together, right? It's just like it doesn't matter. There's a commonality.
Yeah.
Like, there's an ebb and flow, man. And it only takes about a half a second for them dudes to get together and figure out what's going on and they'll go. And then my point to that, I was like, man, well, wouldn't you be upset if we couldn't do it like that? If we weren't that smooth? That's because that's what we do.
Yeah, like exactly.
The same mindset, just kind of a different playing field. Well, yeah, that's the thing. There's some units out there. I mean, no communicate. You don't have to talk.
Yeah,
it's like, man, you can just feel that vibe, and it's just like an ebb and flow. And the Marines, man, they handle their business for sure.
It's like a basketball team that's used to playing together. You just kind of get to the point where you know which player is going to be at what place on the court at any given time. You know, no look passes and stuff like that.
That's how you know they're flowing together, and not everything else is just in their way, but not really. I just wanted to ask you this question, because every time I watch you guys go into the ring, man, is the anticipation of the fight worse than the fight itself? And the only reason I ask that is because there's that fear and anxiousness thing. Like a lot of people train a long time, or I'll train them and they'll come up to me and they'll be like, no matter what I do, I still have this fear. And I'm like, well, that's actually anxiousness. It runs off the same gland, right? I mean, it's and when that first punch is thrown, then you're like, oh yeah, let's go.
I was fighting in Japan, and at the time I had maybe 15 or 16 fights, and I was sitting in the locker room, and I'm the same feelings that I always get, nerves. And I'm not a puker. I'm the kind of guy that feels like I'm going to pee my pants the whole time. And I had Jeremy Horn in my corner, who at the time probably had about 130 fights.
I know who he is. Yeah.
Yeah. Jeremy's a legend.
I remember that.
And he taught me a lot of the stuff about the fight game that I knew early in my career. And I looked at Jeremy and I said, man, I said, when does this nervousness, like, when does this go away? And he said, well, when it does, I'll let you know. And I just remember sitting there thinking, like, man, he's got a 130 fights. And I'm just like, this sucks. And I knew at that point in time, like, I was always waiting for that fight where I was like, oh no, it's just another day.
That never happens.
Nope. Okay. Never.
Because it never happened to me either. I was just wondering.
Yeah. So I would sit in the locker room. I mean, I would sit in the locker room before the fights. Like that scene, when you see that scene in Gladiator, when they're underneath the Colosseum, Coliseum.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that guy pisses his pants and he kind of, you know, Gladiator steps out of the way.
Got that dude outside that gate slinging that whatever it is. Oh, yeah. I remember that scene.
And he steps out of the way of the urine, and you can just hear the crowd. Like, that's what the feeling was like for me every time I was in the locker room. I hated it. And then you would walk out, and the moment that you hit the arena, it's like one of those lamps. You know, remember those lamps? You may have had one when you were a kid. It was like a ball, and it had the electric.
Oh, yeah. You touch that sucker, and it.
Yeah, and the little electric lines would follow you, but you could kind of feel the electricity.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it's like walking out to the arena. Like, you feel that energy in the air. You can feel it, like you could feel it on that lamp. And it's a very intoxicating feeling.
Sure.
And then when you get in the ring, you know, that cage door shuts, it's like, it's just at that point in time, it's almost like being in a play and the entire audience fades to black. And you can't see or hear anybody in that audience except my coaches, because I have a trained ear for their voices. And it's like me and this guy are just in that cage.
So what's
dancing.
The ambient sound like? This is my favorite question to ask you guys. The heaviest moment is that walkout. And I never had to do it. I had to drop into a cage. But I mean, going all the way back to building Colosseums, you know, back in the Roman days when they built them around gladiators to fight.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what that is. They packed that sucker and you guys come marching out. That's unbelievable. I mean, that takes balls that you have to pull around a freaking dump truck to do that, bro.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, the fear, like, never did I really fear getting hurt. That was like, I don't believe if I was actually fighting, for example, in Rome, in the Colosseum, that my fear would be death as much as it would be, because people fear things like failure, right? And that's that.
You think, I mean, that's different for every fighter, though?
What?
That's different for every fighter, you think?
I don't know. I mean, for me, because I'll say this, my worst critic was the man in the mirror. I had to come home and I had to look myself in the mirror and tell myself I failed when I lost.
Yeah, yeah.
And so,
because some, like, people fear death.
It got to the point for me where it didn't matter if there was a million people watching or 100 million people watching, because none of those people mattered. Like, it didn't matter if some armchair quarterback Monday morning guy was like, yeah, well, Franklin should have done this or whatever. Like, none of that stuff mattered. I had to come home and be like, bro, you fell short, man. Like, you didn't accomplish your goal.
Oh, that's a great way to say that. I mean, because a lot of these younger fighters, they suffer from that. Like, they get wrapped up, and the fighting is it's a mind game.
Yeah.
As well. And just to get wrapped up about what people who aren't even in the fight are saying, it can eat you alive.
Absolutely. Listen, in life, you have your circle of control, and you got to worry about the things that are in your circle of control. And once you start worrying about things that are outside of your circle of control, then your mind, you'll be distracted. You'll be on things that, like, it'll take you away from the goal and completely distract you. It's like, you have to hone in on that stuff and say, these things I can control, and so I will affect them. So when I was getting ready for a fight, for example, like, you know, you could start reading an article, some analyst that's breaking down the fight, like, oh, Franklin's not strong enough for this guy. He's, you know, and whatever. And then you start thinking, like, man, is this guy that strong? And then it's like, well, can I control that? Can I control if he's stronger than me? And it's like, well, I can, but I can't. Like, I can't go make him weaker, so why worry about it? But what I can do is I can focus on my game plan and approach the fight in a way that will help negate his strength if he really is stronger than me. And so now I'm focusing on
you should have already known that, though, right?
What?
By the time you get there, you already knew that. Whatever they're saying, strength, weakness, you already know that.
Yes and no.
If you don't acknowledge it, well, that's acknowledging it, right? That's the problem.
But as the fight approaches, if you are the kind of person that starts listening to the noise in the background, then you start thinking about these things and you forget, like, I can't control this.
Right.
I got to refocus myself.
Right. That's kind of what I'm trying to say is, it's just like, hey, man, noticing it and letting it affect you are two different things. Like, hey, he has this reach and it does this. I'm like, well, yeah, we already know that. But thinking about it aggravates it.
Yeah.
You've already trained for it.
Exactly.
That's when we were talking about, man, when you go in, instead of just trying to be a fighter, just fight.
Exactly.
And that, just to back up that work ethic that we had, and people ask us, it's like, how do you guys get like that? I was like, repetitive, man, we just practice till we just, that's all we do. That's our life, actually.
Yep.
Life is practice. Imagine you and I are training for something later in life. Like, after we leave Earth and Jesus puts us somewhere else, it's like, this is the interim part. So exactly. It never gets old. It's like, I get out and the more, I can't wait to get on the mowers and start cutting the grass. I know it's going to grow back. Like, the minute I do that, I know it's going to grow back. But I there's something calming about it. I'm telling you, there's different things down here. Like, some of us are different, come from different clubs. People look at us like, man, why do you guys do that? And the easiest answer is, I don't know. And the second one would be life. Yeah. You know, it's just the way it is. And what we try to do is get good at it so we can explain it to people so they can enjoy the fruits of our life as we live it.
Yeah, I don't know how many times I've had that comment. Why do you guys do that? I don't know. I really don't know. But I know this much. If I didn't do it, then where would I be?
Yeah.
Then what?
God made some of our hands to get beat up. Some of us came down here to bleed. I mean, the boss man has a great sense of humor. You got to know that. I try to explain that to people. They don't think about that. It's like, well, how do you think guys like us exist, man? Look at we get our butts added to us all the time, which is amazing to me. This is what gets overlooked. Most professional fighters, everyone who doesn't know anything about them thinks they like to go out in the streets and get in fights all the time. That's not it. It couldn't be further from that. Actually, the more technical, the better you get at something, the less you want to do it out of an aggression thing, especially in this world. But talk about that ebb and flow of getting ready for a fight, then the immediate after, you know, after it's over, it's like, right? I mean, that has to change you. Every time you go in, like Jeremy, 100 fights, man, bro. I'm talking about like sanctioned pro ones, like where everyone was looking. That's hardcore.
Yeah, like, I'll say this. You know, I would be sitting in the locker room and you know, talking about fear and anxiety. I would sit in the locker room, literally praying, like, God, just if you can make the lights go out tonight, that'd be awesome. and you walk out and then you fight. And when you're done, and I mean, the moment that that first punch is thrown, whether it lands or not, it doesn't matter, because all that fear and anxiety goes away, because now you're in the moment doing what you do. But when that fight's over and your hand gets raised, you're just like, immediately, man, let's do this again.
What is it?
Knowing that you're going to willingly just put yourself right back in this same vicious cycle.
That's amazing. That feeling, that's what I'm talking about. Like, there's only one way you can get that feeling. And I couldn't imagine being a champion. Like that belt. That, how about that? I watched it when you won the middleweight, man. I don't think
the belt really changed anything, because even when I was fighting at an amateur level, my first amateur fight, it was the most important fight of my career at the time. Okay,
that's a great way to say that.
And then my second amateur fight at the time was the most important fight of my life, and so on and so forth. And it's not like you have this extra motivation, or at least I didn't, because at the end of the day, keep in mind, like, if my worst critic is the man in the mirror, if I lose an amateur fight, I got to come home and tell myself, like, bro, how'd you drop the ball on that one? Like, that sucked, you know? So it's like, that's just, every fight was important to me, and having the title, there was always something. And that's the one thing I didn't like about the fight game, right? Because I got into martial arts to pursue excellence, to become good at a skill, like to just pursue this skill at a level of excellence. But eventually what ends up happening is you start focusing in on opponent, like, rather than being good at something. Let me figure out how to beat this guy.
Those are different.
Yeah.
That takes away from what martial arts. Martial arts is a lifestyle. Yeah, that's why you're always going back into it. Like, to get into a fight, I mean, talk about that. Because my whole life, even from a boy, like in the 1900s, and we'd have to get up on Saturdays and watch the Black Dragon Theater, Kung Fu.
Kung Fu Theater on Sundays, that when we came home from church, man, me and my dad.
So good. So good. YouTube might be one of the best inventions ever when it comes to finding those old relics.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'll talk old martial arts movies with y'all freaking day. Especially
– I can't even remember. I can't remember the last time I got into an actual altercation on the street. I think the last time I got into an altercation on the street was I was living in LA for a couple of years. I owned a juice cafe out there, and I was up at the kitchen where we worked, which was in North Hollywood, and it was kind of a sketch neighborhood. And we walked out late at night, taking like some of my employees taking the trash out. And I walk out and there's this guy that broke into this girl that worked for me. He broke into her car, and I caught him mid act. And I just kind of knocked on the window. I'm like, hey, bro, I'm like, get out of the car. And then he climbs out the window on the opposite side and tries taking off running from me. And I was immediately like, oh, sweet, man. Foot pursuit. Like, this is going to be fun.
Right.
And I end up subduing this guy, and you know, there's a whole story to that. But like, that was probably the last time that I ended up getting in any kind of altercation on the street. And it was amazing to me, just like how you were talking about the paintball game, is how efficient and quickly you guys are. It's like when you're fighting somebody on the street that's not trained.
Oh yeah,
it's almost like I felt like Neo in the Matrix. Like, they went to throw a punch, and I'm like,
that's right.
Really? Like, it was so slow to me, because there's so many tells and different body, like the way that the body mechanics move and whatnot if you're not trained. And it was just, yeah. So the thought of actually getting into a fight with somebody who's really untrained it's unfair.
Well, it boils it back all the way down to a predator and prey kind of deal. Because as soon as natural instinct, if something takes off running, whatever it is it made it do, it's going to want to chase it.
Yeah.
We're taught that as kids. Yeah. I mean, it's ingrained in us. That's a thing. When people are like, well, he took off running, why'd you chase him? Because he freaking took off running. I don't know.
Right? Because God designed me that way.
Yeah, I was like, you can't help
it. Part of my DNA.
Man, that's part of it. Like, some of us came down here to have to do it this. There's everyone is unique in their fingerprint, man. No one's the same height or color, anything like that. And each one of those personalities. I'm not saying there's not similar things down here, but that's hilarious. I can't even remember the last one I got into, man. Tell you the truth, I'd have to think about it. But you get to that age, so you turn around teaching part now. God kind of did that too. I walked that warrior path, traditional martial arts, like, you know, to be the warrior in the beginning, at the end. Man, I'm a gardener. It was either a painter, painter, poet, or gardener, right? But I do the garden part. And it's so, I love it. Raising the kids and trying to be to this part. I'm trying to get to the point to where I don't think about it. Like, do you think about fighting every day?
No.
Not getting in one. That's a huge difference. I'm just talking about the overall concept of it. Is that still?
No, not really. I'll not until I go train. Like, today, Monday, like I typically lift on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So I'll lift and do some auxiliary cardio. Now my lift today had sled work built into it. And so I probably like did a series of intervals where my heart rate was spiked to, I would say probably 185 ish or something.
How
like
long
that.
Do you hold that?
What?
How long are you holding that?
Oh, not long. I was just interval training, like quick sprint, you know, peak it out and then bring it back down. And so that's all I'll do today. But like tomorrow normally today I would go in and I would do a jiu-jitsu class as well earlier in the morning. But with everything we had going on today, I didn't have time for both. So my strength and conditioning always wins that battle. But yeah, like tomorrow, I'll probably go to the gym tomorrow and do some bag work, something like that. Get my heart rate up.
Yeah,
more of a steady game, leg strength, all that kind of stuff. Like my whole training philosophy is kind of like keep myself battle ready for life in the sense of like not fighting, like not battle in that sense. But if you said to me, hey, Rich, let's go do a hike on the John Muir Trail, that I wouldn't have to say, okay, well, give me a month and a half to train for it.
Like, yeah.
I could throw a 40-pound pack on my back and we could go do a, 50-100-mile hike, over a period of days with elevation changes. And I don't have to worry about not being in good enough shape to do that. And so all my training kind of keeps me in shape to pretty much do whatever I want to do.
No, it's our lifestyle. That's a generational thing, I think, with us, because all of our buddies are like that. Yeah. I mean, at any point in time, we can go. But some of my crew, my brother, still runs those ultras. I mean, I know. Like some of these, like what? And then they want me to go watch them do that. I was like, first of all, I don't like to run. Moreover, I don't want to watch you do it. And that kind of thing, right? I was like, well, there's other ways to get entertainment, but our guys find a hard way to do anything.
I have this. This is my thought process on running. I had to do so much road work for fights, but I would 5K. That's it. That's all I got. 3 mile runs, and anything beyond 3 mile run, my idea is this: like if I haven't caught what I'm trying to kill in 3 miles, or if whatever is trying to kill me hasn't caught me in 3 miles, then both of us have failed.
Right,
and we just need to stop at that point in time. So there's never any need to run more than 3 miles. Period.
Bro, yeah, I'm great with it. Or it earned it, that freedom. Like, dude, if you can put out like that, man, catch you on another day, for sure. So I got a question. Because you fought wars in the ring, man. I'm not even kidding. Are there guys that, and the only reason I can think like this is because the guys I grew up around, I mean, they're guys you just know, if you have to fight them, you want to fight them, that you're anxious to fight, as opposed to when you get in there, like, dude, this son of a bitch is tough. It's going to be a freaking, I mean, of course you say that when you're going into it, but there's just dudes that are notorious, like, dude, man, that guy is freaking tough.
Oh, yeah,
Dan,
man.
Like Dan Anderson you got to beat them to death. There ain't no whipping their ass, right?
I'll tell you who comes to mind. The first person that comes
there's
to
gotta
mind.
There's got to be one that just snaps right in there, right?
The Diaz brothers.
Oh, well,
those guys.
Thank you.
I think fighting those guys would be kind of your worst nightmare, man. I mean,
those guys,
you can hit. You can hit them with the kitchen sink, man, and they will not go away. Like, it is not a battle of skill. I mean, it is a battle of skill because these guys are both talented. So don't take that out of context. But I mean, that is a battle of wit and grill. Wit and will, man.
Like, I don't take that out of context. That is exactly right. Them guys are awesome. I mean, you talk about brother. My brother and I talk about them. I was like, man, well, we never have to tangle with them. We have to kill them suckers, man. They just are freaking tough. And the more you beat on them, the tougher they get.
Man.
It's been a pleasure watching them. I'll always watch them when they get in the ring because they'll just show you what it's like to grind.
That's the whole thing. I think there are athletes, and I pride myself on that. I look back at my career and whatnot. It's like they're athletes that just put it on the line when they get in the cage, right? And that's it. Like you're going to leave it all out there, win or lose. Like win or lose, you deliver. You deliver a good fight. And I can look back at my career and be like, man, there's maybe like one or maybe one fight where I'm like, maybe that one wasn't super entertaining. I don't know. But from the fan perspective, like I always went in, I left it on the line.
I never saw that. I don't know which one you're talking about, but I don't, and I'm talking about from the beginning. even before you.
Yeah, I don't know. I would say if I had to pick,
put out pretty good, bro.
I'll say this: if I picked a fight, my worst performing fight, I actually talked about this in my TED talk. My worst performing fight, and I won, was my Travis Luter fight, because everything that we trained for, it was like it didn't go right. Like everything, we knew exactly what he was going to do. He did exactly. I drilled exactly the way that I should. Like he came in and he cut off the cage and I drilled footwork, but I still failed in the cage. And like he kept doing everything and I had all the tools in the toolbox to beat him, but failed. But like, if you look at, for example, my first Anderson fight, like I made some strategic mental errors in that match and deserved to lose that match, because I remember going into camp thinking like, man, I'm way bigger than him. I'm way stronger than him. Like if he clinches me, he's going to be in trouble. And then I got clinched in that fight and I was like, whoa, what the heck is going on? And so, you know, that's a completely different scenario. Had I actually done all the work that I needed to do to prep for that and still lost like I did with Luter, fortunately, yeah. I was able to with Luter, like find an escape and turn that fight around. But yeah, man, I mean, just, I failed at everything in that fight.
Now there's this, bro, from my angle on that, man, I was like, well, that's don't look at it like that. Cause most of the time we would go in with a plan, it'd go down. Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, it'd go down so smooth. You just kind of like, whatever. That's how you get complacent. And then there's ones when their plan just gets thrown right out the damn window. And if you get through that, that's something.
Exactly.
Teaches you more than anything.
Exactly. And that's what the Travis Luter fight showed me. For me personally, it's like, you know, it's easy to go in. Like, you know, a lot of people will talk about my Nate Quarry fight, for example. And, you know, when you're in control of a match and you knock somebody out with a decisive knockout, like it's an easy match to look good. It's an easy match to pat yourself on the back. Like, hey, look at me. But when you go in and you mess things up and then you get in the worst, like it got so bad in that match with Luter. I wasn't, like my coaches were pretty much like, look, if this guy mounts you, like, don't let that happen. Cause if he mounts you, the fight's over. And I ended up mounted in this match. And I'm sitting there like,
happens, then all right, then what do I do?
Not in your head. If he mounts you, like, you're just done. Like, all at that point in time, the fight's over.
Thanks, coach. All right, Roger.
But you know, I had this moment of like, oh my God, I've lost. And then I was able to like feed this arm bar to him and do this hitchhiker escape and get out of. And it was so demoralizing to him at that point, but it's like, man, I had to dig down and it's like, what are you made of? Are you going to mentally fold here? Or are you actually going to come through this after having all this series of failures in this match, you know? And that was one of those fights. Like that fight showed me what I was truly made of, more so than like a 30-second knockout highlight.
Yeah. Yeah. Which that thing was awesome. I know what the knockout you're talking about, man. Well, let me ask you this. So when you were in there and that was going down, do you ever talk to the guys afterwards? Like I'm not talking about like right after that shit. I'm talking about later down, like, bro, man, that was a great scrap we got into. You got any buddies like that? Have you walked up to any of them and been like, bro, I mean,
yeah,
because we talk about that.
You usually do after the match. Like you'll walk in and like I remember talking to Vanderlei after my second match with him, and I was like, and you know, or I like I said to Chuck, I remember talking to Chuck after he and I ended up at the hospital together, and I'm looking at him, I'm like, bro, what did I ever do to you? Like why
that's like, what I'm talking about. Like, dude, man, yeah, you kind of hit me hard there, and it was
felt personal.
I felt kind of personal.
Yeah, man. Like I was like, did you hear I called your mom bad names or something?
Yeah, I mean,
like,
what's going on here, bro? I love you. Yeah. That's the best. When you wind up at the end of the there are guys like this, man, and gals, when you wind up at the end of the day in the hospital with your dude, you're like, oh, it was awesome, especially if you're alive, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, Loazo and I, David Loazo and I spent the evening in the hospital together. Like, that was our after-fight party.
That was a hell of a fight.
I broke my hand in that fight.
Was your forearm or your hand?
I tore some ligaments in my ankle.
Loazo, did you break your forearm or your hand in the Loazo fight?
No, the Liddell was the forearm. That was the ulna, and Loazo was my second metacarpal. I think I broke that when I was throwing a punch, and he dipped down. I caught him on top of the head.
In my mindset back in those days, it was the high school college mentality. So like, if we're all in one big school, and like y'all were our tough guys, I know this sounds weird, man, but that's kind of how I looked at it. And I would think about it when you guys would fight, because back in those days, man, we like had a relationship with all of y'all. Like we knew who y'all were, what you were doing, and it was kind of new to everybody. So we made sure we paid attention. And I was like, man, I can't believe the freaking Rich and Chuck have to fight again, because it felt like, man, like what? Who said something? It didn't feel like you were getting paid. It just felt like that was part of the day. And I mean, yeah.
Happened with that fight, right? Is that Chuck was a coach on season 11 of The Ultimate Fighter, and he was set to fight Tito. Tito got injured during the show,
right? Yeah.
Then I got a call from Dana. I was cooking that night when Dana called me and said, "Hey, look," explains the situation. And I looked, I just said to him, I said, have you hit Chuck with this idea? Like, is he willing to fight me? And Dana's like, yeah. And he's like,
he'd fight anybody, right?
Well, it wasn't just that. It's like they needed somebody that they knew people would actually tune in to watch, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because there was this rivalry between Chuck and Tito.
Yeah, yeah.
So immediately the organization's like, well, who are we going to get to fight Chuck? Like, who will actually pay for a pay-per-view?
Yeah.
Like, who do we need? And so they called me, and I'm like, yeah. So I came in for the last 3 weeks of The Ultimate Fighter, finished out being the coach on that season, and then Chuck and I were the headline fight of the kind of the capstone of that, I guess, so to speak.
God, man, those good times, man. I mean, the excitement in our house when those fights would go down, we'd stay up. You didn't miss any of that. Hey, who's notorious? I mean, who the guy in the UFC, but all the fighters, I mean, you still an avid fan? Watch, there's so many, man, there's so many fights these days. It's unbelievable.
It's hard for me to keep up, and I'll see some of the marquee fights. Like, I saw the Colby Covington fight.
Oh, okay, so that's not a thing just on this end, right? I mean, there literally is so many of them. They're hard to keep up with.
Yeah, but, you know, for me, though, I work for ONE Championship, and so on the other side of the planet, like, we just had our 10th anniversary show, just a few days ago.
Congratulations, by the way.
And so it was a big show. Like, Demetrius Johnson fought Rod Tang in that hybrid match that we did. I don't know if you guys saw anything about that, but it was like, you know, we have a roster of, I don't know, 400 plus athletes or whatever we have. And so me keeping up with our roster is hard enough as is for me to try to keep up with, you know, UFC, Bellator, PFL, all these other organizations on the planet, you know?
Well, talk about that now. I mean, that transition from the fight game to, you could transition to anything you want to be actually after your fighter.
Well,
I mean, that's just kind of how it is, right?
I mean, fortunately for me, like, having a math background and being college educated helps that I'm not just like a face, like I can actually do work. But I'll say this, working for ONE Championship, when I would go to the events when I was done fighting, it took me probably 2 to 3 years to actually get to the point where I could sit in the arena and enjoy the show or enjoy what I was doing for my job. Like, if I was commentating,
yeah,
because every time I was there, I had the same feelings as if I was competing.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. That's what I was talking about earlier. When did that go away?
That's
exactly what I'm talking about. When I was like, hey, so when did you get rid of that fighter feeling? Like when you were standing there and it was going down, as opposed to being where you're at now, how long did that take? A problem for a lot of guys, not a problem, but I think it should be acknowledged that that's actually a thing.
Yeah, I would say probably like, I don't know, probably about 3 or 4 years after I retired, it took. Yeah. And I think what helped it was me being actually in the atmosphere, finally getting to the point where it's like, I can be here and just enjoy this show.
Sure.
And even to this day, Marcus, like, I don't like listening to my walkout song. I like my walkout song, For Those About to Rock by AC/DC. Awesome song. But I hate listening to it because it puts me in a mental headspace that's like, man, I'm ready to just go. Like, it's like you've taken like and just riled me up,
bro.
And
that's audio programming. They do that to us.
Yeah, if I'm at the gym and that song comes on, I've been there are times when I'm at the power station, Mike's gym, and that song will come in, and I'll just walk. I'll be like, dude, can you do me a favor to flip the station or turn it down during this song? Because I don't want to sit and listen to it while I'm working out. It just puts me in a different headspace.
Man, I get that. I get some grief sometimes online when they're like, hey, man, play your AC/DC. Because AC/DC is one of them. Whatever that is, if I hear like Hell's Bells is what triggers. So I would play Hell's Bells to get everybody ready. I was like, when you hear them freaking bells ringing, boy, you better get your ass ready.
Yep.
So I don't listen to them either. Like, that's audio programming. If those songs even come on, I got to go the other way. And it's because I will switch.
Yeah,
that's
exactly,
what does
exactly.
it. I mean, from what I can smell, the taste in my mouth changes. Once you solidify it with a fight, like you train up with that music and then you go in there like a cage animal and we get hit like we do, that's programmed. I mean, you could do that to football players if you wanted to, but yeah. With us, it's absolutely, that's a real thing.
I don't know if for your training, you guys did any kind of like visualization exercises or anything like
that. Absolutely.
But so we did a lot of visualization exercises, and I would come in on a weekly basis on, say, like a Saturday, for example, and we would do a sparring session. But when I was doing my sparring on Saturdays, I would come in, I would go into the locker room. My coaches would be in there. They would stretch me out. We would play locker room noises that were recorded because I worked with a mental performance coach. And so he had recorded like locker room noises and me getting introduced. So we would listen to these tracks, and I would walk out to the cage for that sparring day with my music. And it was this entire visualization exercise so that each week it felt like I was walking out to my fight. Yeah. And then we would have visualization all week long for different kinds of things. I'm big on visualization, but by the time I actually got to the real match, it felt like I'd been there a dozen times.
That's the same feelings. Thing we do. Yeah.
Now when you're sitting in the locker room, nervous, it's anticipated, you know, that's how you're going to feel. And it helped tremendously, but all that it's like that, you know, that audio priming that you're talking about going on, or the audio conditioning, it's like, that's what it does. It puts you back into that headspace because you've spent so much time conditioning yourself to be there mentally.
That's right.
On the flip side, do you ever play that music or play those sounds to get you into a headspace that you need to be in now that you're out of the fight space for training purposes, just for whatever it be, working out or whatever the case may be?
Listen, the last thing I need to be is on the highway with some douchebag going 50 in the fast lane, listening to that.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what I need.
You can't unprogram that.
Exactly.
You'd have to go all the way back through life and reprogram those. Those songs are ruined forever. Not ruined. They hold a special place with a special person. Yeah, that's the thing.
To answer your question seriously, though, there is some music that is like kind of synonymous with some of the workouts that we did. Like, I don't know the name of the song. What's Disturbed song? The one that's
Down with the Sickness.
Down with the Sickness, man.
Yeah, Down with the Sickness. Like, that song brings back some memories of us working out in this gym. And
with our generation. Dude, bro, that's our generation kind of. There's a couple of those hymnals when they came in. Anything from Metallica, man, you know, Sandman.
But I'll tell you this, on the flip side, like when I come out of a training session and I'm still amped, which typically isn't the case because by the time you're done, you're so depleted of energy that you don't need to be brought down. But in the event that I do need to be brought down, like I would listen to like one of my go-to songs was What I Got by Sublime.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because it's just a good message in that song.
Yeah, you should have both.
Yeah.
I mean, music, rhythm, you find a playlist. That's, man, technology these days, man. If we'd had that back in the day, you had to flip the tape, rewind it, do, you know, whatever it was, however we got it done. But
I don't know, man. At those days, man, you had to actually listen to the radio.
You had to listen to it, right? Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like I would sit with my, remember your dual cassette deck?
Of course.
Radio that have, and you would have it on record.
That's right.
Record, play, pause at the same time.
Same time.
And you would wait for the radio to play that song you wanted, and then you would unpause it so you could record it. And then you'd always get upset because the DJ on the radio would talk like halfway through the intro of the song.
I was going to say, you'd only get half that son of a bitch in there because you'd push that button and the dude would start talking again.
You're like, shut up.
Yeah.
And then the cycle starts over to wait for it to come back on.
Good times, man.
Rich, I got a speed round for you. You ready for it? Do you still deadlift barefoot?
Sometimes.
And why is that?
I usually use, when I'm lifting, I'll use a zero shoe. And so I'm more connected to the ground, but I don't mind taking my feet off because I'm just connected to my shoes off because I'm connected to the ground that way. But what I don't like to deadlift or squat or any of those kind of lifts in is a standard gym shoe that has like a squeezy foam on the bottom because you're just less stable.
Mm, good point.
Actually, I know this isn't speed, but back when I was in college, I used to work out, like lift weights in wrestling shoes, which were, I guess, a zero shoe before zero shoes were cool.
Oh yeah, they bring all that stuff back around. Like, take a sock, cut the foot off of it, call it a leg.
Call it a leg warmer. Exactly. What time of day are you most productive?
Probably either late morning and then late at night. So I have a down lull like during the afternoon hours of the day, and then I'll be tired and I think like, man, I'm gonna go to bed early tonight. And then by the time like 9 o'clock swings around, I'm wide awake and I'm wired, just wired until 2-3 in the morning.
That's that fight. That's from being a fighter, right?
Yeah, probably.
No, absolutely. That is exactly what that is.
What's your favorite cheat meal?
What's a cheat meal?
Do you have no cheat meals for you, huh?
Okay, so occasionally I'll eat 90% lean beef instead of 96%.
Oh God, really? It's that strong?
No, no. Okay. I'm just BSing.
I used to have. I understand epic what you're saying. Meals. That's a big deal.
I used to have these epic cheat meals, but you know that mindset we were talking about before about my work ethic. It goes into my nutrition, which is the only way that you can have abs after the age of 40, anyway, is through nutrition, not working out, unless you're just a genetic freak. But I would say, like, I used to have these epic cheat meals of things like pizza and Krispy Kremes, and now
honestly
I'd say my favorite cheat meal is and I still kind of consider this part of my nutrition is sushi. Yeah.
Mm. See, I always think whenever I'm eating healthy, I always think sushi is like still healthy.
It is kind of, but it can be not healthy because you get like these spicy rolls, maybe a little bit of mayo.
Yeah, we're
there.
Splitting hairs now.
And you start having, and then three rolls, four rolls, five rolls.
Why'd you have to
rolls?
Bring the Krispy Kreme thing into this? You know, there's some things down here. I think they're made with love. You don't gain weight. That's my perspective on life.
No points, no calories, no carbs. What is your?
I would be a spokesperson for Krispy Kreme. But I'm just saying.
Krispy Kreme, we're looking for sponsors.
Yeah.
What is your biggest pet peeve?
Oh man, I got a laundry list of these things. I don't deal well with disrespect, and I don't deal well with inefficiency, and I don't deal well with blatant stupidity. So for example, if you worked for me and you make a mistake, I'm cool with that. If you're like, hey, listen, and I'm cool with it as long as you know you made the mistake and you're making an effort to not make that mistake again. But somebody that worked for me and continued doing the same thing over and over again, I can't. I just can't do it. Inefficiency. Driving slow in the fast lane. Oh, no,
yeah.
Tis the reason we don't listen to certain songs, right?
Well, yeah. Thing is, it's like you got to think about it. They're not working for you. Like if someone comes in and that's the mental thing, it's like, man, you're not doing your job. It's like, well, you don't even work for me if you're not working. That's
yeah.
It's hard to make that transition.
Yeah.
It is. It's like having kids, right? You got to discipline them suckers. And then it is, man, it's a whole new level. It's a completely different level for sure.
What podcast or podcasts would you recommend our listeners check out?
That's a great question, man.
It's good.
Well, did you come up by yourself?
Yeah, right here. Did it.
Did you really?
I mean, if I was going to make one recommendation for a podcast, obviously it would be Team Never Quit.
There you go. Yes, sir.
Great answer.
Oh,
this thing's up. It's going up on the wall. It's going right on there by Augustus McCray.
Yeah, listen. Hey, when I watch a future episode, I better see my magazine.
It's going to be framed up by Augustus. Shit, I might move over Snake Eyes.
What did he refer to Snake Eyes as a prop?
Prop. We'll move the prop.
I'll take care of this one. Yeah. Well trained.
What about your podcast? Now you have a podcast, right? Talk to us about your podcast.
Quite Franklin. So my podcast.
That is a great name.
Great name.
Thank you. It's a playoff of Quite Frankly, obviously.
Yeah.
So I think that for me, the podcast kind of came back around full circle because it's the teacher in me. Even when I'm like my whole fight career, I've always been that guy that's like, I'm in the gym, I'll share information or knowledge with people. So I'm just one of those guys that I like to present information to somebody. I'll have people on my podcast that maybe I don't even agree with them on a certain subject, or maybe I do, or maybe I partially agree, but I like being challenged. I had Dr. Carl Hart, who was talking about the legalization of all drugs. He's a casual heroin user. He was on Joe Rogan's podcast at one time as well. And I've never even used drugs in my life. Never. I've never even had a sip of alcohol before. So for me to come from that perspective and say, okay, I want to have a conversation with this person so that they challenge my thought process on this. And I want to take this information and give it to people to help them think critically so that they challenge their thought processes on it. That's kind of what my whole thing is with my podcast.
Well be sure to listen to it.
I remember when we were talking about sniper school earlier, and you know, you, in our communities, man, you got to take one guy from each walk of life. That's kind of what you're dealing with. And going through cyber school, when we were sitting there and someone's trying to explain something, the way they do it is different. And a lot of people get upset about that. Instead of getting upset, be like, hey, how do you see it that way?
Exactly.
I mean, not why. Like, that takes time, right? I mean, like, you got to become buddies of like, hey, man, it's like two sides to a coin. One kind of sound just grooves a little differently, but it's still the same freaking coin, man. It's like, if you're describing something to me, man, tell me why you see it that way. And that's a gift into a tool. I mean, that's a tool.
Yeah.
to have multiple points of advantage.
I tell you what, it comes with life experience. We talk about this, Marcus, before about when God reveals these nuggets to you on the back end of life type of thing. But with just experience, because for example, I've been to about 65 countries in my life at this point.
That's awesome.
And I've seen the poorest of the poor and the wealthiest of the wealthy. And just even like reading your book, Marcus, when you talk about how do you say that?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you suddenly realize, like, you think about this concept and how our perception of Islam, all of Islam, was in 2001. And then I read a book like yours, and it definitely changes how you see things, because people suddenly don't get clumped all in one group. Like, not everybody.
That's why I did that. Yeah. That's why we did that. To remind everybody.
And so, and your book actually was a real eye opener to me. And I probably read that book before I did a significant amount of travel to the Middle East. But now that I've been to the Middle East, like when I travel, when I landed in Pakistan, the kind of welcome and hospitality that you receive in countries like that, like, man, in the United States, you can barely get somebody to come to the airport and pick you up if you fly in.
Like, that's crazy, like, right?
If Marcus flies into Cincinnati, I'll be like, all right, man, let me know what time you plan, lane, and I'll be outside at the pickup lane.
Man. That's right.
Man, in a place like Pakistan, for example, I had like 50 people showing up with like flower lei necklaces to put them on my hand and like sprinkle me with water to bless me when I was there. It was just, it was mind blowing. I've never even received that kind of welcome in the United States when I was being brought in as a quote unquote celebrity somewhere. So it just, you learn stuff and you see things from different perspectives. And I think that's just experience in life talking.
You know what? It's almost as if, and I don't know why that's true, man. What you just said is so true. And we're actually the guys that should point that out. I mean, you're the toughest thing going in there, so most people aren't going to mess with you anyhow. But then it is safe in there. It's only dangerous if you're not dangerous enough to be in there. That is a concept. Yeah. But if there's more than 2, 3, 4 people, some women and some kids living in one area, trust me, it's safe. It's just different.
Yeah.
Exactly. And life is different. So when you travel the world, I mean, it's just like when we're living here. There's some places you know your ass ain't supposed to be in. It's like jumping in a lion cage at a zoo. You know your ass ain't supposed to be in there.
Yeah.
And that's with life. I mean, the world is a jungle and is whatever you want to call it. But as you get more experience in it, they say the further you travel from where you were born, the more you learn, right? The more keys you pick up. And then if you turn back and go back to it, that's the treasure chest. You realize why God put you there. So,
Andrew, I'm not trying to ruin your speed round here, by the way. Like, this, we started off fast.
This is perfect, man.
Did we rabbit hole it? I'm sorry.
No, I think this is great. I think this is a good point to ask you, though. We are the Team Never Quit podcast. So, of all the things that you've learned over your careers, you've been a math teacher, a fighter, you are an entrepreneur. I mean, obviously, you've had multiple companies that you've been a part of. What is the biggest piece of Never Quit advice you could leave with our listeners?
I'll go back to when I was in college, the story that I started telling, I didn't finish. My sophomore year of college, I finally got smacked with the reality of, like, I'm not this math genius and I have to actually work hard at what I'm doing. And I'm taking this class, linear algebra. My instructor, Dr. Wright, actually wrote the book. I didn't show up to
I'm sorry. That's just great when that happens. When
yeah,
the dude
exactly.
Teaching the class is give that he's on the book, dude. I'm sorry. So I just remember that.
I didn't bother showing up to the midterm. I'd already filled out my drop slip. Like, I basically had just given up. And if it wasn't for this man who gave me this fourth and long football speech about how, like, sometimes life's, you know, like, things don't work in your favor, but if the game's not over, it's not over. So he basically said, like, listen, go home tonight, study for the exam, come in tomorrow, even though the drop slip will be late. He's like, if you don't pass the exam and get the grade that you want, I'll fill out the drop slip, backdate it, and turn it in for you. And I was ready to just drop out of college completely because I was like, well, I'm not as good at math as I thought I was. And I don't know if this is the first experience with, like, true adversity in my life of some level, I guess. I don't think that's the case, but either way, like, I mentally folded there. And so he talked me into doing that. I came in, I got the grade I needed. I ended up passing the midterm on that. I ended up with a C in that class. But after that class, that ignited me and it lit me up. And from that point on, I had, I think every math class I took after that was straight A's except for one B. I was like the guy, I became the guy that was ruining the curve.
Oh man. Yeah. Don't do that. It'll be that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I did it on accident one
time.
Ruins
the curve.
All that to say, man, is that one moment in time. Like,
and you're
that,
a damn tough guy, so you can't say anything to you. I mean, that's a double threat, bro. That's not even fair.
Well, listen.
You know, I'm a resident badass be the guy that's good at math. That's not even fair.
Especially
man.
When you're surrounded by math people, right? No, like, you're definitely the badass.
My
in
point
that
exactly. what a bully.
But all that to say, all that's to say that my college professor, had he not actually cared, like had he not actually taken the 5 minutes that it took to give me that speech, like I could have folded, man. And that's the difference between like my life could have gone a completely different direction because, you know, I didn't end up being a math teacher forever. But what that did is like, that was that moment in time where I could have accepted quitting and that would have been an acceptable path sure. in life.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And, and he saved me from that. And so it's like, you know, when you're down like that, it's like, man, you can be so close to being out. And it's like, that's just not necessarily the case. We had, bro, our 1X show this last weekend, we had Angela Lee fought Stamp Fairtex and we had this Atomweight Grand Prix. Angela Lee was out for 2 years because she had a baby. And then we had this Atomweight Grand Prix where the winner of the Grand Prix faces Angela for the title. So this is her comeback after 2 years of time. She's fighting this girl that's fought through an 8-woman tournament to get to her. And she comes out, she looks good with her striking. And then she gets caught with this liver shot, just a little shovel hook to the liver.
Brutal.
Angela folds. Like this fight is all but over. She folds over and she grabs this girl's leg and just kind of hangs on for a second. And once she recovered, oh man, she just basically like she did to this girl what like as a, like what I did as a big brother to my little brother as a kid. Yeah. Just like had her in so many bad positions till she finally finished her. And it was like that one moment, like it was that moment of weakness where you could have just folded. And it's like, man, you work through these things in life and there are blessings on the other side that you may not even be aware of.
Yeah. Oh, they're there. Yep. People, you know, you got to remind people that's the pass down, you know, age is rank kind of thing.
That story of my sophomore year of college, like had my instructor allowed me to drop that course, my life would have taken a completely different path. I wouldn't have won a title. I wouldn't have been as successful in the things that I would have settled for a life of mediocrity.
Yeah. I think it's important to remind teachers how special they are because you never know when your time to deliver that one line. Same thing happened to me, Mr. Jones. I'll never forget pulling me out of class. What he said to me changed my life forever. Oh. Changed my life forever, man. And
but you know what? You know what though, Marcus? Like you have that ability every single day. We all do. You don't have to be like you don't. I mean, I've had the ability to like I've been blessed with meeting people that I've heard these stories from fans. Like I had a fan one time. I met this kid who had lung cancer at the age of 21, and he was a friend of a friend, and he's like, hey man, listen, I know this 21-year-old kid. He's a big fan. Like, would you come meet him, like have lunch with him? And I'm like, yeah. So I'm sitting down talking to him. I'm asking him, like, how'd you get lung cancer? He's like, I've never smoked. I don't know how I got this. And he's like, but he told me this story. He said, he's like, one day I come home and I went through a treatment, like a radiation or chemo treatment. I can't remember which one it was, but I came home from that. He said, my body was zapped. It was like my 8th or 10th treatment or whatever. And I'm laying on the couch and he's like, I'm losing weight. My mom is pleading with me, just eat something. He's like, but my stomach's upset. I'm sick. I'm nauseated. I'm tired. I didn't feel like eating. And I'm laying on the couch and I'm flipping through the stations. And he said, and your fight comes on. And he said, I was a huge fan of yours. And I sat, and I don't know which fight it was, but he said, I sat and watched that fight. And I asked myself, what would Rich do right now? He's like, he'd get up and eat something. He said, so I got off the couch and said, Mom, I'll eat. And I'm like, and I looked at this kid. I was like, bro, I can't, like, I don't have that grind in me. Like,
right. Like that. I hate to bust your bowl, man, fight. But I wouldn't have done that. You're awesome.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm like, that is a resilience that's beyond anything I know, honestly. And so it's like, you know, that thing, like I'm that person to somebody. And it's not just because of what I've done. Like I can be that person to somebody that I happen to just hold a door for at the grocery store, man. Like, you know, the whole butterfly effect, you never know when some small gesture or whatever. It's like, even with Marcus, like he's got this book out and seeing the kind of things that he's gone through in this book, like just, it's just that impact that it has on people. Like you just never know whether you've written a book or you've won a title or you're a teacher at a high school, or you're just somebody who it was, you know, helped an old lady across the street with her groceries type of thing. Like you never know what you've done for somebody that day. I had a guest on my podcast, a guy named Kevin Hines. He was a guy who jumped off of the Golden Gate Bridge and survived it.
Oh, I heard of him. Yeah.
Yeah, the Golden Gate Bridge, the most popular place to...
I didn't know that. That's crazy.
Yeah, most popular man-made place to attempt suicide.
Can you believe that?
This guy survives this thing. Yeah. He was on the bus on the way there, and he told this story about if just one person on the bus would have said, "Hey, man, how are you doing today?" He's like, "I wouldn't have jumped." And I thought to myself, like, if I was on the bus, would I have recognized that, or would I have been so caught up on my phone or doing some other stuff that I wouldn't have been in the moment, that I wouldn't have seen it? And that's the power. Like, just somebody sitting on that bus, they didn't have to be a world champion or some guy whose mission didn't go right and has this amazing story and went through all this, you know, trauma in life. Like, you don't have to be somebody special to save somebody like that. So yeah, I don't know how I got off on that tangent.
Yeah, no, don't miss your moment. It's kind of, you can get tangled up and kind of miss that.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Saving Private Ryan when Tom Hanks is carried to find out he was a teacher, but he was also a badass? That resonated with me because that's back in the day when I was in. We always watched those war movies, and the fact that you're lying that you walked. I mean, it's that's just crazy. Those two things don't go together. Most everything that you do, you kind of like, it's like, man, that's a cool puzzle. So your life is, and it's been it's been awesome watching you do it. Seriously, thanks.
Listen, man, I tell you, I've truly been blessed, bro. Like I say this, like, I don't think I would be in this place in my life without God having a hand on where, like, he's really directed my path for the good and the bad. Like, I've seen bad things happen to me where I'm like, yeah, I was not doing things the way I should be doing them.
Oh, we all been there, bro.
Yeah, this is a little correction that I deserve right now.
I still look at him like, are you kidding me? I thought this was all right, man. Yeah, oh, that's funny. That's a thing. That's a thing. We can get our ass whipped too. Don't think that we can't. I mean, it doesn't happen generally anymore, but back then, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Rich, man, thanks so much for being on. Would you mind telling our listeners how they can support you, what you've got going on, and just all the ways that we can help you out?
Yeah, you can check out my website. It's richfrankel.com. I have podcasts on that website as well. It's I call it Quite Franklin, which is a play off of Quite Frankly. Check me out on my socials. You can just search me on the socials, Instagram, Facebook, whatever. It's Rich Franklin or Rich Ace Franklin. And you can catch me there. And now, you know, most of my social content and a lot of my podcast content is usually kind of motivational or informational stuff that I'm just trying to help people, empower them, educate, and entertain.
Well, brother, man,
doing that.
You've been doing it. Keep doing what you're doing, man. It's awesome. We thank you so much for coming on here, man. God bless you.
Nah, I appreciate it, man. It was a fun conversation too, Marcus. Thanks for having me on, man.
You bet.